You're listening to Siren Radio. It's just coming up to, this is so you know when things are happening, 10 minutes to 3 in the UK on Tuesday the 23rd. I put this into context because it's now time for us to welcome our old friend and buddy live from the Man Cave. Well, live at the moment, maybe not necessarily as live when you listen to this on air or online. It's Bruce K. Rosenbloom time. Are you there, Bruce K. Rosenbloom?
Yes, I am, Andrew. Good morning, and good afternoon or good evening to all of you in Lincoln.
Absolutely. Now, you see, the other confusing thing is you are now on what we'd call British summertime, but we're not. We don't change until this weekend, so it's been very confusing trying to remember what time you are. But we know where we are, don't we?
I hope so.
Unfortunately, we have a really happy thing to finish with because it's National Puppy Day in the US, but more of that in a minute. The sad stuff is that our news media were covering a terrible shooting in Colorado where I believe, amongst others, a police officer has been shot. Can you fill us in with any more details?
10 victims of a Colorado shooting are now being identified. One of them is a police officer. One was a man with 7 children. His youngest child was 7 years old. There was a very crowded market. A man walked in with an AR-15 rifle. You know the script here. They walk in with one of these automatic weapons, which they shouldn't have, and for whatever reason, opened fire and killed a number of people. And you know, it's and there were children of all ages, adults of all ages in this market. The people panicked. They ran for the doors. They ran for the exits. But 10 were not so fortunate. The police showed up en masse. They were able to take him down, not kill him, but wound him. And he's in custody. And, you know, this killer hopefully will be able to figure out what went through his mind when he did this and why. And it's just becoming all too commonplace in this country. And, you know, and it's funny, not funny, but, you know, just within the last 10 days, there was another mass shooting in Atlanta, probably occurred right after the last time we spoke, where a gentleman armed with a rifle went and attacked the massage parlor businesses in Atlanta, primarily killing, you know, Asian women who were just, you know, doing their job down there. And for whatever reason goes through these people's minds, the police, the sheriff in Atlanta said the guy was just having a bad day. Are you kidding me? He wouldn't label it as a hate crime, but he said that the shooter just had a bad day. And it's just unbelievable that somebody would even say that until you really understand what the heck went on down there. But there's been huge protests all week long because they want it labeled as a hate crime, because in this country, as you know, you've probably been hearing, the attack on the Asian community in this country has been relentless over the past number of months. Attacks on the Asian community is nothing new in this country. Generally, they take place when things happen where China outdoes the United States, when they gain leverage in trade wars and things like that. People will take it out on the Asian community. But, you know, they're correlating a lot of the hate crime of late on Donald Trump's rhetoric when he labeled it the Kung Flu and the China virus, and he just kept blaming this pandemic on China. And again, you know, people have heard this message so often that they go out into public and they feel empowered to attack people of Asian descent, even though those people had nothing to do with bringing the virus to the world. You know, it's not their fault. And it's
so we're well into the first 100 days of Joe Biden's presidency, and yet the former president is still rattling sabers and making things very awkward for people.
Yeah, it's like, you know, when a president leaves office after the election, he usually lies low and lets the other president take office and do his thing. Obama, for instance, you didn't hear a word out of him for 4 years after he lost to Donald, you know, after he left office and Donald Trump came in. And George Bush, when he was beaten, you know, you didn't hear him, you know, say anything or criticize the president that replaced him. But not the case with Trump. It's he and his allies have seemed to have really ramped up his his presence, and he's finding ways to comment on everything Biden's doing through press releases that he's putting out there. And it's like he's got this organized army of minions that are continuing to fight the election was stolen argument. And the amount of disrespect being shown to the Biden administration from the GOP and the far right media has been just relentless. And it's just unbelievable. The disrespect, you know, it's come to the point where it's vile, it's uncalled for, it's disrespectful, you know, where young Congress people like a Matt Gaetz from Florida can publicly say, I wonder sometimes if Biden has a pulse. Or this Lauren Boebert who questions whether Biden is senile. You know, they haven't been on this earth long enough to really understand what somebody like a Joe Biden has done for this country, and the service that he's given this country, he and his family. And it's just disrespectful, you know. Let Biden's administration, you know, have a chance at doing, you know, what they want to accomplish. You know, nobody from a former administration blocked what Trump did is disgusting and as low as what he did. They let him do it. But, you know, Joe Biden got out there and got the distribution of the vaccine out there. He's putting more than 100 million shots in people's arms in 100 days, as he's promised. He's gotten a stimulus bill passed without Republican support. You know, he's called for unity. He's called for bipartisanship. He's not getting any of that. And he's just continually getting attacked by people like Mitch McConnell and Lindsey Graham and Matt Gaetz and Jim Jordan and all these people that were, you know, carrying on Trump's fight while Trump was in office, continue to carry that torch. You know, Ron DeSantis, who's the Republican governor of Florida, who's an ally of Trump, refused to see Kamala Harris on a visit. He just didn't make time for her. He didn't have time to see the vice president. Yet the Republican governor of Texas is as bad as he is. At least met with Joe Biden when Biden came to Texas to offer help for Texas when they went through the flooding and then the electrical blackouts, the water issues that they're having down there. He extended, you know, as much help as he could to the state of Texas, a Republican state. That governor found time, but now that he got the help he needed from Biden, he's back on the attack, blaming Democrats again. So, I mean, it's like, this stuff never ends. There's no more political civility in this country. Even after an election, when a new administration comes in, the attacks just continue and it's relentless. Republican legislatures around the country are passing all these voter suppression rules that they're calling the new Jim Crow laws, what they're being labeled as, because the laws are trying to be pushed through in individual states to make it more difficult for people to vote, particularly people of color. And these Republicans know that, you know, that people of color take advantage of early voting, mail-in voting, whatever, you know, the extended hours. And if they can suppress that, it gives them a better chance to win the election. So, you know, there's protests going on about that. There's all sorts of, political action, people like Al Gore are out there now, trying to rally the troops against this kind of stuff. So political activists are out there, from each side trying to push their point of view to get things changed. So it's like the country's polluted in a way. It's polluted. People are acting. I don't know if it's the pandemic. I don't know if it was Trump. I don't know what the cause of. Maybe it's a combination of all of it. But
it may like very well be.
It's like polluted. You know, it's weird.
And all of this is against the background of the fact that the pandemic is still there. Today in the United Kingdom is the anniversary of the first lockdown. And at midday today, people were invited to hold a minute's silence, particularly remembering people who've been lost to the pandemic. But you mentioned Florida, and we're coming up to Easter break. It just reminds me, listening last year, to the fact that everybody suddenly decides they need some sunshine and goes to the beaches. We're going to have super surge in COVID infections, whilst the death rate may be going down, but the infection rate will not. And you were saying in our little background chat, you've got a much more virile viruses attacking younger people.
Yeah, well, I think there's a whole juxtaposition of this whole pandemic now. You remember when it first started, it attacked older people, and particularly guys of our age, most vulnerable, right? And we took it seriously.
We did.
We hunkered down. We did what the government told us to do or what the doctors recommended us to do. We social distanced. We stayed inside. We washed our hands. We wore the mask. We were doing it. And then we waited long enough, and we have a virus, we have a vaccine, and we're getting our vaccines. We're doing
our
part to help.
Vaccine.
Right,
you've had your two. I've only had my one.
Yeah, and then those on the other, and then the younger people, but they were the ones that were less vulnerable at the time, and they weren't being impacted as much. So they, they were a little bit more brazen in how they were operating. But now it seems like the tables have turned in a way. Because we have these new strains that are out there, the Brazilian strain, the African strain, even the one from Great Britain. And these are a lot stronger and a lot deadlier. And they're saying now that they're really attacking the younger people at a much harder rate than they did than this virus did earlier on. And yet the younger people still just, they're out there doing their thing. I mean, partially driven by states here in this country who've decided that because the death rate is down and the number of infections are down, there's still lots and lots of infections. Just the number is down, but it's still massive amounts. So they feel, emboldened to go out there and party like this thing never happened. Miami Beach right now is flooded with college students, just going crazy down there. They've declared an emergency and put curfews in place down there because there's so many college kids just not adhering to the rules. No masks, no social distancing. And health experts are afraid that this thing is going to come roaring back and is going to hit the young community equally as hard going forward as it did the older generation earlier on. And, and I get it. I mean, when you're in college, you're not afraid of anything and you go out there and
you're immune, don't you?
Yeah, I get it. And they want to party and they want to enjoy their college years, but we are still in a pandemic, and this thing is deadly. Almost 600,000 people in this country alone have died, and it's like nobody sees that. Nobody pauses for a minute and says, "Wait a minute, this thing is," they just want their lives back. I get that, but it's a bit selfish too. I mean, we can get through this if people just use common sense and stop letting political divides, shape how they respond to something that could potentially kill them or their family. I don't get it. I just don't understand what goes through people's heads when they.
I think you put your finger on it, and we've been hinting at that over the last couple of weeks, that what's really happening is people are utterly fed up with everybody telling them they can't, because they can't see why they can't. And with the sunshine coming along and stuff like that, they just think, oh, goodness, what harms they're going to be. And off they go. And we seem to be targeting the youngsters. It's not just the youngsters. I know that in the area in which we live, there appears fewer and fewer people who used to wear masks when we were out on walks are wearing I wear a mask. I've got one of these neck things as well, which I put up. Only because it's not gone. And as I say, our chief medical officer, Professor Chris Whitty, today has said we're not out of the woods. COVID is going to have a long rain shadow. The storm is going to cast its shadow for a very long time. And there will be another wave, he said, which is an interesting thing for him to say on the anniversary today. We're recording this on Tuesday, the 23rd of March, at just gone 5 minutes past 3 in the afternoon, that there will be, he's saying there will be some more. I mean, that's natural because we've sent the children back to school. We've got university students back being taught face to face. It's going to happen. Whether we can control it by being disciplined, that's the next thing, because we're sitting here saying, when was the last time we managed to get out of the country? Well, long time ago. We love traveling when we're not at the moment able to do that. It's seriously frustrating. And, there is part of us thinking, oh, come on, let's just go to the coast and have a packet of sandwiches on the beach. But that would be wrong, because right, we don't know who out there is carrying it, because we could be carrying it even though we're inoculated.
Right. And it's like a game. It's like a sport. It's like to succeed in any sport, it's all about fundamentals, right? It's all about practice. And when you do certain things over and over and over again, and you get really good at them, you win. You can, because you execute. Yeah. And but when you when a team goes out and plays another team, in whether it be, you know, football or soccer or baseball, whatever it is, if you just go out there and you're not prepared, you get creamed, right? But when you take the time to practice fundamentals and discipline and understand your opponent, you have a much better chance to win. And this is no different with the pandemic. So if you do wash your hands, if you do socially distance, if you do wear the mask, those are the kinds of things that can help defeat the pandemic. It's that simple. And quite honestly, Andrew, what is really wrong with wearing a mask? You know, big deal. So you find one that color codes to your T-shirt or your jeans, and you go out and it kind of looks kind of fashionable. And if it's this little piece of cloth that's going to help,
reduce the possibility.
Reduce what you're going to breathe so that you can stay healthy. You know, so be it. It's not that big of a deal. You know, it really isn't at the end of the day. It's not like we're wearing some kind of suits that we have to put on and walk around in. I mean, we can still do what we're doing. You just cover your mouth.
Now, I'm so
it's
excited
really all they're
about
asking.
What we're going to finish with. There's one other big story that you hinted at earlier in our chat. There are still problems on the border. The president's going to go down to have a look at what's going on there.
Right. He hasn't announced when, but they're planning a trip soon for Biden to go visit the border. There's, children are showing up on their own, at very young ages, and they're showing up at the border. And I don't know what they expect to find when they get there, and I don't understand where they expect to go if they get into this country. I mean, a 9-year-old who's walked 120 miles from from Honduras to the U.S. border. I mean, where is a 9-year-old going to go? So they let him in. What's he going to do? It makes no sense why these children are showing up, but they're not being let in right now, and they're backing up at the border, and the numbers are growing, and as we know, there's really no place to put them, so they're in these facilities where they're given these makeshift sleeping bags, and they're being they're crowded in spaces together, and they're lying and sleeping in poor conditions. And and that's just the reality of it down there. I mean, I know Biden has sent down FEMA to go check things out, and they say that they've got to give these people a chance to make a better life for themselves. But it's almost like a strategic change of the way they're coming to this country. When Trump was in office, they came as families, and the children were separated from their parents. Now it's just the children coming by themselves, because Trump had closed down the borders for this, but Biden is kind of, he changed the Trump policy, and this new change in strategy of these people coming to the border is kind of thrown a monkey wrench into that whole change in strategy. So the system was broken before Biden got into office. I think Biden had good intentions, but they've had to shut down now, and they're taking a lot of heat from all sides, from Democrats, from Republicans now, for what's taking place down there. Part of it is because there's been no unified strategy. I mean, it's always, there's been no president who's been able to get anything done at the border, Whatever they choose to do down there is never the right decision, because there's always some other variable that comes into play. And so right now, Biden's being blamed for all of this, but he inherited a bad system. He was trying to make it better, and it's just not working. And he's going to have to figure it out, and he's going to have to visit down there, and he's going to have to, they have basically told these people, don't come, the border's closed. But you've got thousands upon thousands of children showing up, and what do you do with them? I mean, it is, if it's not a crisis, it's some kind of a puzzle. I just don't know what kind, but it's it's a sad situation, because it just, Biden's got enough on his plate, and now he's got to deal with this as well. And he'll be called Harry Houdini if he can figure out a way out of this one.
Well, I think he quietly seems to be just getting on with things, and we'll just have to watch that one. As we mentioned at the beginning of the program, exciting news in the Rosenblum household. Sad news a couple of weeks ago when you had to say a fond farewell to your second wonderful dog. Brooklyn and Dodger are now in wherever dogs go in the next stage of life for them. And you've decided to leap back in, but with a slightly different design.
Slightly different. Yeah, the Brooklyn and Dodger, who used to enjoy having breakfast with you and Deb when you'd come to visit.
Indeed.
Are now, their ashes are in two urns, which are in my office here. So they're with me right now.
Oh, wonderful.
And, you know, we keep them close. They were terrific.
Terrific characters.
And they passed and we decided, oh, we just can't go through the heartbreak again. There's just no way. And then we were looking online and we found this breed called the Mini Golden Doodle. It's a it's a breed that's a crossbreed of a golden retriever and a poodle.
Oh, wonderful!
And there's breeders all over, but we found this wonderful breeder in Utah, Salt Lake City, Utah.
Goodness!
And we adopted a little guy who will be joining us in about 2 weeks.
Oh, no.
And his name is going to be Duke.
As in D-U-K-E, Duke. We pronounce it Duke here.
As in Duke of Edinburgh.
Edinburgh, not Edinburgh.
Edinburgh. The Duke of Edinburgh. He'll have a little bit of that. But there's some very famous dukes out there. And so he's going to be a combination of all of them. So from the world of baseball, we have Duke Snider, who was a Brooklyn Dodger. He'll in a Hall of Famer. He'll be that thinking went into the name Duke Ellington, the musician.
Yes.
Duke Kahanamoku, who is a world renowned legendary surfer from Hawaii. They built a monument in his name in Oahu. And then, of course, Duke of Edinburgh.
And, of course, I've just thought of the other one, which I think I muttered to you a couple of days ago. Stevie Wonder wrote a song and sang a brilliant song called Sir Duke, which I think is a dedication to Duke Ellington. So
yes,
he's even
yes.
got his own music, hasn't he?
Mm-hmm. Yep. So he's going to be royalty in our family, I'm sure. And they sent us a picture, the woman who's kind of working to help kind of housebreak him and get him ready to go. Sent us a photo last night, and he's just so cute, and he's going to be maximum 30 pounds. But yeah, they're anywhere from 15 to 30 pounds. He'll probably be in the 20 to 30 pound category, it looks.
Oh, wonderful.
And it looks like a mini little golden retriever with curlier hair.
You have actually sent me a picture. I went loopy because I love Labradors. We've had Labradors in the family for many years. Sent it to my two daughters, who are all but going to jump on a plane to become your puppy dog walkers because they just said they want one. Well,
we will be delighted to have them. And I'll tell you what, you know, having a little pup in the house, without Brooklyn and Dodger around, it felt like it was a real void was created here. There was nobody cuddling under the desk here when I'm on the air with you. Nobody to follow us around the house. And this one we can, you know, it was impossible to take Brooklyn and Dodger with, you know, 215 pound dogs. It was just, you know, it was difficult to walk them. It was difficult to travel with them. But this guy we can take with us when we travel, and all of the kids and the grandkids are very excited, and you know, he'll have places to stay, and it's going to be a whole different experience. It's going to be a lot more manageable experience, and we're very much looking forward to it.
It
happens to be National Puppy Day in the United States.
Oh, so. Fantastic. Couldn't be better. Now, just one final footnote, well, actually a knee note. We need an update on that rather nasty knee, which has been causing you grief.
So the knee, we had MRI'd again, and it showed that the meniscus was torn worse than they expected. But the doctor told me that when you're looking at the knee, there's three cavities of the knee that they look at when they decide whether you're going to have a knee replacement or not. And when there's trouble in all three cavities is when they'd make the decision that you need a knee replacement.
Okay.
And to get a knee replacement, they prefer that the older you are is when you have it done, because they said they only last sometimes between 10 and 15 years, and you have to get it done again.
Yep.
And so if you're like at my age at 66, I'm looking at a second one, you know, if I'm lucky enough to make it to my 80s. But if I can kick the can down the road a little bit, you know, I'll only need one, and should last me the rest of my life. So
sensible.
In my case, they found two of the cavities one of the cavities was fine, the other two were damaged, and the meniscus being in one of the cavities was shredded and torn a lot worse than they thought. And then the arthritis in the other cavity was really bad. So what he's going to do is he's going to go in arthroscopically and clean out the meniscus and some of the arthritis. And he thinks that he can give me a level of comfort in my knee that will last me a few more years before I will actually have to have the full knee replacement. So after my phone call with you, I'm calling him and getting an appointment set up, and it'll probably be 2 to 3 weeks. And which is crazy because now we've got this coming up, and then Jillian is due with our grandchild, our new grandson, in about a week or so. So we're waiting for that shoe to drop, so to speak.
And then you get the dog.
And then we get the dog. So we got a lot going on. And, who says there's nothing happening during the pandemic? You know, there's plenty going on, you know.
Lovely song by the Blockheads called Reasons to Be Cheerful Part 3, and you seem to have lots of reasons to be cheerful, and indeed I'm sure you've made a lot of people smile listening to this week's edition of American Cousins. Bruce K. Rosenblum, thank you so much indeed for being with us here on Siren Radio.
As always, Andrew, it's my pleasure, and hopefully we can do this again next week.
Fingers crossed. Take care.
You too.